We're going to talk today about uncomfortable situations, because this is a theme that's been interesting me. Yes, uncomfortable situations. Okay, and every year before Shavuot, right, the issue of Giyur comes up in the political sphere and the political arena, because Ruth is the prototypical Ger, you know, Giyoret. So she's the classic example of Gerut. So there's an organization called Itim, which does very good work. It's run by a man named Rabbi Seth Farber. And he had a Yom Giyur in the Knesset yesterday. Okay, talk about the issue of Giyur and the challenges of people who want to be Megayer. I don't want to take a position pro or against. They raise their issues. I have a friend. His name is Dov Lipman. He's a Chaver Knesset. So he posted about his speech that he heard from one of the women who, on the one hand, she felt she was mistreated by the rabbanim in the you know, Ma'arechet HaGiyur of the Rabbanut HaRashit. And then she went to this organization called Giyur Kahalacha. I happen to know some of the people involved in Giyur Kahalacha. It's a private organization in Israel that's conducting conversions that are not recognized by the chief rabbinate. Just understand. Anything not... What? Orthodox rabbis. Totally Orthodox rabbis. Okay? Whatever. There's a lot to talk about politically, but whatever. But she complained, and he showed a picture and about some of the things. Then he raised the point about, you know, do rabbis ask inappropriate questions or whatever. But then he raised the issue of tefillah.
Who's he?
Dov, in his post. And the reason I'm sharing it is because he raised the issue of tefillah. You know, he did it publicly, so I don't feel any, you know, it's not anything private. He's very public about it. So the issue of tefillah is, as we all know, that when a ger he becomes a convert, so there's a whole process. The last part of the process is he has to go to the mikvah. Okay? He has to go to the mikvah. He or she must go to the mikvah in front of the Beit Din, in front of three men. What? Yeah. You didn't know that? No, this is very clear. No. No, they're in the room.
Wait a minute.
Wait. Really? You guys didn't know this?
Can I tell them how we did in Cleveland? Right, there's like a big...
This is not how they do it. You could do how you do it in Cleveland, but this is not universal. They do it otherwise.
Okay, they had like a big... It was almost like a sheet with a hole in the middle. Is that how she did it?
No.
She wore it.
It wasn't
a
sheet.
It was like a robe that
she wore. Also wore a robe. It wasn't a sheet.
She wore a robe.
It was this huge piece of...
Piece
of styrofoam. It was this piece of like it was a board they had made out of like
that like pool noodle stuff.
Right, exactly, like the noodle stuff, and it covered the entire. It was measured to cover the entire area of the mikvah.
Right,
and then there was a tiny hole.
It wasn't
a hole
tiny. It was big enough that she could go
for
out
her
there
head.
And
right,
come back.
It was big enough for her to go to come back. So, i.e., what could the Dayanim see?
Nothing. Just her head.
So in Israel, they don't do that, but she goes in a Shabbos
and
robe.
Anybody
in a Shabbos robe is like, you know what I'm saying? It's like... Right, exactly. Like women in the pool this summer.
And then takes it off when she's in?
No. She's wearing the robe. It's not tight. It's loose. So therefore, it's good enough.
Like a house coat.
Right. It's loose. So the rabbis can't see anything. Everybody acknowledges the rabbis can't see anything, but it makes the women uncomfortable.
Some of them.
Makes some women uncomfortable. It's possible.
Do you mean the movies are correct?
What do you mean?
I'm saying all those horrible movies where the rabbis are actually in the mikvah. I'm saying there's...
No, because the movie is about... I don't know.
No, it's done in a very... I hope in most places. I'm sure not in all places.
No, in all places. This part, in all places?
In a very sensual way, in a very sensitive way, with a female who's there with them. She's not alone, and it's...
The point is, it makes some women, I imagine, it makes some women uncomfortable. Okay? Now, but I want to read you. We're not making this up. This isn't a chumrah that the rabbis impose because of whatever. Okay? I'm going to read you. I'm going to read from the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchot Gerut, Hilchot Gerim. Okay? The Shulchan Aruch says, I'm reading from Reish Samechet Se'if Bet. Okay? Okay, im kibel, if the convert kibel accepted the mitzvot, and he's a proper candidate, malin oto miyad, then you do mila, okay, umamtini lo ad shiyirapei b'fu ha'shleima, and then you wait until he's healed, v'achar kach matbilin oto tvila hogenet v'lo chitzchatzitza. You have to do a regular tvila, okay, u'shlosha omdim al gabav. Okay, and there are three men standing above him. Three, not men, three dayanim. When he gets into the mikvah. So this is male or female also. When they get into the mikvah. Umodim lo, while they're in the water. Miksat mitzvot kalot. Umiksot miksat mitzvot chamurot pam shnia. Remember, they met in the court. So now they come back and they say, Bob, remember that we talked about this idea of accepting the mitzvot upon yourself. We're going to tell you some of the mitzvot. V'hu omeg b'mayim. And he's in the water. Okay? Meaning, you think about... What's that? Why? Yeah. Before you do it. What do you mean? Before the mikvah. Why is that surprising? Like,
can I say something also about the mikvah?
We're talking about a man here. There's a man here.
Yeah. Can I say something also about the mikvah? Our association with the mikvah is very intimate because it's connected for us with a very intimate activity. So I think, like, if we can try somehow to divorce that association, you know, it's not just the fact that we're going to the mikvah.
No, right.
Because they all do. Just understand. You don't want to think about that.
Like, for us, where we go to the mikvah at a very emotionally vulnerable time anyway. So if you can try,
I'm reading Shulchan Aruch. Okay. No, I agree with you, but...
I had a colleague at work ask me, she's not religious, her stepmother's son's girlfriend is converted last night going to the mikvah.
Stepmother's son, last night?
Well, yesterday.
Wow.
Yesterday.
Okay.
And my friend's a singer, and they asked her to sing a song when this girl goes to the mikvah. This girl's a Korean-American who's now in Israel. That will be appropriate to this girl converting. Like the whole family.
The song in the mikvah?
The whole family is
converting. No, this is not an Orthodox conversion. So what? There are non-Orthodox conversions in Israel? Sure. There are non-Orthodox conversions in Israel. They're just not recognized by the chief rabbi. Like the Orthodox conversions that are not recognized by the chief rabbi. You know?
So then how is they
cannot legally get married.
No,
you have a situation.
You
have the perverse situation where someone is.
And I bet you nobody explained that.
There are right. No, I'm glad they explained it very clearly. It's very. They have to sign a document when they do in Gyur Halacha. They have to sign a document saying we understand that this Gyur that we are doing is not recognized by the chief rabbinate. They have to sign. It's very clear. So you can have, this is a digression, which is fine. You can have, there are four categories of people in Israel. You have non-Jews who are non-Jews halachically and non-Jews according to the state. You have Jews who are Jews halachically and Jews according to the state, which is all of us, I hope. Okay. Then you have someone who didn't convert or converted conservative or reform in Chutz La'aretz, who is not Jewish halachically, but Jewish according to the state of Israel. Why? Because according to the state, but not according to the rabbinate. And then you can have the opposite, someone who converts in Israel.
They
cannot get married, but they are recognized for aliyah, from Misrad HaPnim, right? They have the right of return. Or conversely, you have someone who converted halachically in Israel, not recognized by the state of Israel, who is a Jew halachically, but not Jewish according to the state of Israel. Because the chief rabbinate doesn't recognize the right of private bat din to do conversions for reasons that are either legitimate or not. I want to, what I'm saying? That is a huge political fight that's going to blow up and probably bring on the coalition this year.
Can they get married like in America?
What?
Orthodox?
But they can't get married there because they can't go to the
In theory, they could get married here also. They just couldn't register as being married. Like, I know rabbis who will marry them, but they just can't register as being married. In fact, I have a friend who did a giyur, and then he did the wedding, but it's off the books. Why? Because the... it's not an official wedding. Even though it's illegal to do that, whatever.
Hopefully, by the time their children.
My husband's aunt did it twice. She did it in South Africa, and then she did it here.
Usually, South Africa is highly considered.
When she came,
interesting. Okay, so, but. I know someone who did a giyur three times. First reform, then conservative, then Orthodox.
Yeah, but they did an Orthodox conversion, but they did it again here.
Yeah,
I'm involved in this all the time. It's not as simple. It sounds bad. It's not as simple as it seems. Some Orthodox conversions are better than others. We'll just put it that way. You know what I'm saying? It's a tragedy because people are often misled. Let's leave it at that. Do I? I have done three in my lifetime. Two children and one adult. Okay? For reasons that, I personally think it's doing giyur is a tremendously huge achrayut.
One minute. You did not do those conversions. You facilitated it through a recognized...
No, two of them I did.
You didn't do yourself.
I was a member of the Beit Din. Okay. I was a member of the Beit Din. You don't do it myself, but I was a member of Beit Din.
No, but what? I mean, it wasn't. It was a recognized Beit Din.
Yeah, it was recognized. I didn't.
Right. It wasn't like you and two guys from Dunkin' Donuts.
No, that's not true. We did one of them. We did me and two guys from Dunkin' Donuts. Not two guys. Two important rabbis.
No,
we made a Beit Din. We made a Beit Din.
It was rabbis who do conversions and who it's accepted by the Israeli government that they do conversions.
Right. Now
you
the
did, it wasn't
the critical question for Gayim is will my conversion be recognized by the state of Israel? And it's a fluid, it's a very complicated, difficult, fluid moment, but we digress. We're going to get to. So I want to talk about uncomfortable situations. So we're now, think about this man, right? The man is in the water. What? The man is in the water, and they're asking him questions. He's not wearing a bathing suit either. They're asking him questions. Do you want to be, you know, remember we talked about this, and are you sure you want to do this? It's like right before you know what I'm saying? It's right before he's going to do the tefillah. Because, you know, you really could still change your mind. If you're having second thoughts, you should really tell us. Because what? What?
No, but men with men, it's fine.
Is it?
Not for everybody.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you think that a man feels comfortable? Three rabbis come in, he's naked in the water, and they're asking.
I just hear stories of what happens at our pool with some of these men. What?
Some, yes. Some, no. I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. But who omeg b'mayim? When he's in the water. Shulchan Aruch continues. V'im haita isha. If it's a woman, nashim moshivot ota b'mayim ad sabara, then women help her get into the water, and the implication is that she's covered in some way. V'hadayanim bibachutz, okay, the dayanim are outside. Umodiim ota miktzat mitzvot kalot v'chamirot, and then they're outside and they tell her all the mitzvot while they're outside. V'hi yoshevet b'mayim, she's in the water. V'achar kach tovelet bifneihem. Then she must dunk bifneihem. Meaning, it's very clear in the Shulchan Aruch. It's clear from the Rambam. It's not. There's no like wiggle room. Yes or no. Tovel bifneihem or not. Okay. Vehem machzirim pneihem. And then they turn around once they see. Veyotzim kedei shelo yiru otah kishtalem yamayim. And then they leave so that she can get out of the water afterwards. Meaning they see her dunk and then they leave right away. That's the way it's been practiced since the time of Rambam, at least since the time of Shulchan Aruch.
She's wearing a cloak. For her man, it said b'li chatzitza, and for the woman, it didn't.
For what? She's wearing a cloak. She's clearly wearing a cloak. Now, I will acknowledge. I did a little bit of. Well, I'm sure they push it down. Whatever. I did a little bit
no,
of.
But it's,
I don't care. It's still uncomfortable. I don't care how much she's wearing. She could be wearing. She could be wearing. She could be wearing a burqa. You know what I'm saying? It's uncomfortable. I would imagine. What?
She's not going.
Why? That's what the implication is.
She is wearing a burqa. She's wearing a Shabbos robe.
Okay, but so why is that?
Well, women on the internet claim it's terribly nuts anyway.
No, come on.
I wonder if it's a...
Look at
it's
all those tiny women
They're converting.
They're
converting.
They're so emotional. They're becoming a Jew.
Is it discomfort? You do it what? If what?
You got to change your mind, because that's when you're doing it. So they ask her the questions.
Yes, they ask it before they come in. So it's interesting, because there's a debate. Some rabbis, a small minority rabbi, suggested that maybe they could ask her and hear her go under the water instead of seeing her. I would just point out.
Like, well, why can't you trust the Balanit?
And the Balanit will watch it, right?
How come there's a mikvah you trust the Balanit, and for this you don't?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that the Shulchan Aruch wrote explicitly bifneihem, that the rabbis have to be present at the time of the tevilah. Okay. And the Pisgei Tshuvos writes. The Pisgei Tshuvos is a commentary, super commentary. Im lo tavla bifnei beitin. One opinion of the Mate Aaron, Sarich lo shiyodiu ha'pam sheinit mitzvot mitzah mitzvot v'tipo b'pnei beitin. That you have to tell her and then do it again. I.e. that without this, so without the rabbis being present, there is a chashash, there's a concern that she's not Jewish. Because remember, what makes her Jewish is not just the acceptance of the mitzvot. It's a tefillah. Now if you ask me, I believe in my heart of hearts, I've never seen this written, but the idea of the tefillah, what is the tefillah? Why do they need the rabbis there at all? And is the rabbi's presence just a technicality? Or is the presence of the Beit Din, does that transform her tefillah into something more? Right? I personally believe that, according to these poskim that felt that they had to be there, both for men and for women, that the presence of that the tefillah in the presence of the beitin makes it into what we will call halachically what's called a ma'aseh beitin. It becomes an act of beitin. It has tokif. It has halachic significance.
They're like magically transforming her into Jew?
Halachically, not magically.
Magically halachically.
Somehow, something transforms her from non-Jew to Jew. If she goes to the mikvah on her own and says, I'm Jewish now.
They're like channeling the Shekhinah.
Exactly. They represent the koach of the Sanhedrin.
That's cool.
Correct. Okay? Here's the problem. She's uncomfortable. What do you do about that?
I imagine they are also uncomfortable.
Oh, that's what I want to talk about.
I would
hope. What about, absolutely. You don't have to hope. You don't have to hope. They're uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? And not just for them, for the women, for the men as well. It's very uncomfortable.
So do they turn around? The woman goes in?
No, they go. She goes down. She goes in. The baladi puts her in. She's wearing the robe. She's in the water.
Do they not look while she's going in?
No, they don't look. No. They call them in afterwards.
Okay.
Right. I have heard about horror stories where, like, there's a miscommunication and then they come in and she's not already in the water. That's terrible.
That's
right. That's pretty awful. It's possible.
How can you guarantee that every gyor is like this?
What do you mean?
I'm saying I
there's a policy. It's very simple. What's so hard? What's so hard?
Yeah, there's a policy, but some of the... I don't know. When we went to the rabbi, not when we got married, it was a horrible experience. The guy was nasty. So I'm saying you have all kinds of rabbis around.
Ah, right.
You have all kinds of rabbis
around.
This, by the way, this is the debate about the politics. This is the debate about the politics in Israel about the notion of do we want one central authority or do we want different authorities? I.e., so this is I wouldn't say Tzohar's position, but I know Rav Stav's position is he wants local rabbinates to have the ability to do giyur, not because the halacha is different, but because we believe that when there's competition in the marketplace, then people will have an incentive, right, to improve the service. And we've proven this with regarding to weddings. We've just proven it. If you go to the Rabbinate of Yerushalayim, where Rabbinate did you go to? They're not going to be nasty to anyone. I promise you they're not nasty.
Because
you're married, yeah. But they're not nasty anymore. Because they understand that if they're nasty, people are just not going to go to them. And they need the money. They need the harshamot, which is great. Like, we have no interest in doing all of the weddings. We have very much interest in people having a good experience when they do the weddings. Okay? So is the same thing true vis-a-vis giyur? The ta'ana of the Rabbanut is, we don't want a shuk giyur. We don't want people shopping for the most kulo, which is also a legitimate ta'ana. It's a very legitimate ta'ana. Now, there's power and there's politics and whatever. Okay? Just to give you the whole picture, I have to write a little piece about this. The whole picture is as follows. The Supreme Court this year, issued a ruling stating that the Misrad HaPanim must recognize some giyurim done by Orthodox rabbis in Israel. Not the ones done now, but some giyurim. Why? Very simple rule. There is no law about who has authority to do giyur in Israel. Even though the Rabbanut HaRashit says that they have the right to determine the only authority, there's no law. Like, you go in the books, there is no law who should do giyurim. There's no law that says, as opposed to weddings, where it does explicitly say that the Rabbanut HaRashit has the authority, and kashrut, where the law does say, and there was a ruling this week, the law does say that the chief rabbi has legal authority, so the Supreme Court might not like it, but they enforce the law. And if there's a law in the books, they'll enforce it. Here, in the rule of Geirut, there is no law. There's no law. There's no law that was ever passed to decide who has the authority to convert people in the state of Israel. So therefore, the Supreme Court said, in lieu of a law, with no law, we're going to decide. So, the point is, if the Supreme Court is going to allow Orthodox conversions, the conservative and reform communities in Israel are going to say, we also want to do conversions. And the Supreme Court is going to say,
External. Okay.
We don't have the ability to decide which is legitimate and which is not. And they said it. They wrote in their opinion very explicitly. Knesset, get your house in order. Because if you don't get your house in order, we're going to have to decide based on the principles that we understand. If you do pass a law, fine with us. You know, so now the fight basically is, do we pass a law or don't we pass a law? Who's fighting? Who cares? What?
Everybody.
What?
Everybody cares.
Who wants, so the Haredi want the chief rabbinate only to have the authority. Everybody else wants
external
other rabbinates to have some authority. So you have this, so the question is, for the chief rabbinate, yes, the Haredi only want the chief rabbinate to have the authority. The question is like this. The question,
they are
the chief rabbinate, the Haredi. So the question is as follows. The question is as follows. Faced with the threat that if you say all or nothing, you might then get legal conservative and reform conversions in Israel according to the law, will the Haredim say, we're willing to allow Rav Stav to do conversions so that the conservative and reform don't?
How would that solve the problem?
Because then they'll enshrine a law giving local rabbinates the ability and no one else. Oh, everybody understand?
No. Yeah.
It's a game of chicken. It's a game of chicken. It's the Haredim's choice. It will be their choice. Will you give up total control in order to prevent conservative and reform conversions in Israel?
I thought it was centralized or local. I thought those were
yes,
the two options.
That's exactly local. Right.
So Orthodox.
Orthodox. Only Orthodox.
Local Orthodox is an option?
Yes, of course.
I thought you said that once you say local, then that opens
up to
all denominations.
No, the government can legislate whatever they want. The government can say, we decide kosher is what the Orthodox say. That's what they said about kashrut. They can say the same thing the government about conversions. Do you understand? Everybody understand? Will the Haredim give up control or not? I actually don't think they will either. there's no way. And that's so. You know.
Wait, how does Nazir do the Nazir
through the chief rabbinate? It's under the authority of the chief rabbinate.
Like
yes.
Like Zohar for weddings.
Haredim.
And what's Rav Drukman's project?
Rav Drukman is a member of the chief rabbinate. He is the authority of the chief rabbinate. Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. Everybody, like I know, it's like very complicated.
Yeah,
that's the game of chicken. Everybody has to understand. It's a game of chicken, and it will either bring down the government, or conservative and reform conversion will be legal in Israel at the end of the year.
Yeah. Them, it's accepted.
That's right. That's right. What they'll say is, you guys can do what you want. We're still not going to recognize those conversions. Which is very interesting. Because they promote and tout the Supreme Court when it works for them.
Although
when it doesn't work for them.
What? You said the letter I sent you about the kashrut.
Yeah.
If they don't recognize the conversions, but they don't have a monopoly on marriage anymore.
No, they never had a monopoly on marriage.
They had a monopoly on marriage.
Who, the chief rabbi?
Yeah.
It's all local rabbinates. It was never such a thing. It was never a monopoly on rabbinate.
There just wasn't a competition. It just wasn't somehow.
There wasn't another.
There wasn't another body.
The chief, let people have to understand. Chief rabbinate never marries anyone. Nobody goes to the Rabbanut HaRashit to get married. Where do you go?
You go to the Sana.
No, you don't. You go to the local Rabbanut.
But they're officially invested with the power from the chief rabbinate.
So it's so hard. So it's Tzohar. Tzohar is, no such thing as Tzohar. You don't get a ketubah from Tzohar. You get a ketubah from Shoham or Gush Etzion.
Uh-huh.
So the big fight was, you could do your rabbis, your weddings in Shoham, but why are you doing weddings in, you know, Ramat HaGolan through Tzohar? That was the big fight.
Right?
Well, that politics. Anyway, we're back to our tefillah. Uncomfortable. So she's uncomfortable. What do we do about that? What's the answer? What's the answer? The answer is, I believe... Right.
Yeah.
I believe that the answer is that there are certain... You are... What?
It's uncomfortable to become Jew.
Exactly. That the situation demands a level of discomfort. Both on the part of the rabbi and on the part of the convert. And that I like people who say, but she's uncomfortable and it's not Sanua, I have a real problem with that. Like, what, you think the Shulchan Aruch didn't... Rabbi Yosef Karo didn't understand Tzniut? You think he wasn't aware of the law, you know? He wrote many, many laws about halchot tzniut and yichud and all these things. He was very much aware. Rambam was very much aware. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to come in and decide, well, you know, we're going to improve upon. There's a level of discomfort. That's what the halacha demands. In order to have that, there's no possible way to have this ma'aseh bekin without the dayanim in the room. It's impossible. Sometimes, in order to accomplish something necessary, you have to have discomfort. That's the way life is. No.
Birth is
uncomfortable. Yes. So I wanted to bring this.
Yeah, but a lot of women more than girls.
Still uncomfortable. So I wanted to illustrate this point through the parsha, through the section of the parsha called Isha Sota.
Ah.
Right. Turn to Perek Hay. I'm meeting by Parakeh. Yes, this is a parsha shiur. We're 25 minutes in. What?
Yeah, I also thought it was about Ruth.
What about Ruth? Oh, really?
Yeah.
We'll get to Ruth. Okay. We're going to get to Ruth in a second. You're going to miss it? You don't know what I'm getting to in Ruth?
Where are you going?
To work.
Work.
Okay.
Akita Tetnef teacher didn't come, and they need me to sit there while they do their work. Akita Tetnef teacher.
What's an Isa Sotav? Idaber Hashem, Yaperek. Perek Hey Pasuk Yud Aleph. Hey Yud Aleph. Chapter 5:11. Vaydaber Hashem l'Moshe l'Emor. Daber al b'nei Yisrael. Ve'amarta aleihem. Ish ish ki tiste ishto. Uma'ala bo'ma. When a woman is tiste. Listot means to deviate.
Yeah.
Right? Sotash means she deviated. Uma'ala bo'ma'al. She...
She yeah. broke their promise.
She, right. Mi'ila, in classic terms.
She,
she didn't cheat. She did not cheat.
She
if she cheated...
She betrayed his trust.
She betrayed his trust. That's correct. She did not cheat. If she cheated, if we knew she cheated, then they have to get divorced. If there's witnesses that she cheated, she did not. Yes.
She violated
his trust. Uveshachav ish otah shichvat zera, and a man's left with her. V'ne'elam eine isha v'nistera v'hi nitma'a. Okay? And it's hidden from the eyes of her husband. V'nistera v'hi nitma'a. And she was nisteras, so she was hidden away. She was secluded. V'eid ein ba v'hi lo nitpasa.
No, I believe v'nistera means that he warned her specifically not to be with that particular person.
What does it translate? Okay.
V'nistera.
No, she hidden. She was secluded. She was secluded. She was secluded. Okay? Now, it doesn't mean she necessarily did. Okay? V'shachav ishita.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. Or ve'avar yudav. It continues. Ve'avar le'a alav ruach kina v'kineit ishto v'hinit ma'a. And it passed upon his, her husband, ruach kina, a spirit of
jealousy.
Kina can be two things. Jealousy, zealotry. Right. Correct. Okay. Avar alav ruach kina v'kineit ishto v'hilonit ma'a. He is mekaneh b'ishto. He's jealous or zealous, and she didn't. Okay, she did something. Okay, what did she do? Let's get to understand. What did the sota do? She was mityached. Right. She was mityached with another man. Okay, and then her husband said, "What?" Her husband was jealous, and he said, "Hey, this is the process." He says, "I saw you go into private with, you know, Biff. Right? I don't think it's him." I don't think it's appropriate. What movie is that from? Nobody knows?
Yeah.
Come on. What? Back to the Future. Okay. Where have you been? Okay. Right?
In the future.
That's true. And then I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's mat'im. And I'm warning you not to do it again. He warns her in front of witnesses. In front of Adim.
He doesn't know what went on in the room.
No, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Or no, it says ruachina o lo nitma. The Torah does not know.
Something happened.
The Torah does not know at all. Because if the Torah didn't know, if we knew, we would never do the whole sota process.
I think she went for marriage
counseling. What? She went for counseling?
Yeah.
Why didn't she bring him? You should know. The laws of Yichud, the rules of Yichud are not only clear, they're brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're today's society that's so free and so whatever, like I always like to say, if Bill Clinton had adhered to any standard of the laws of Yichud, then his legacy as a president would have been totally different. But he didn't, because that was not the kind of guy he was. You know what I'm saying? But
God never mind him. What about all the Israeli heartbreaking?
100%. 100%.
Never mind him.
What about all of us? It's not. You don't have to be a member of Knesset to understand that we're all human beings. And Chazal have very clear understanding and realization of sexual urges and desires and things of those nature. And they made rules to prevent any such questions from happening. Right? You know? Don't do it. You know, and don't try to cheat it either. Don't put yourself in that situation and don't think that you're so strong that you're not gonna succumb to it. No, we're fine. Really? No, you're not. Okay? Who?
Moshe Feiglin, when he was in Knesset.
Yeah.
That was just randomly on the floor. But if a woman came to see him, he would always make sure the
stapler
was in the door. So never closed completely.
Why do you have to leave the door open?
You'd say to open the door.
In my shul, when I had an office, I insisted that they cut a window in it. You know what I'm saying? So that, you know, even if people want to meet, they want to talk privately.
So you had the door closed, but there was a window there.
Yeah. So you could always see. And you had to make sure also there was somebody in the building at the same time. That's right.
It
was a thing that we as rabbis talked about a lot. We talked about it a lot.
That?
What?
that.
Why? If people can see in? If there's people walking by all the time?
And it's not locked.
Changes the law of privacy.
Yeah.
What? How do you nap? It was a problem. It was a shade. It's not even happening. Medical, medicine, doctors, dentists. Are you kidding? You know, it's everybody. Okay. Okay, we did that. Hey, V. So what's the process? This is what I want to talk about. So she, by the way, did violate dress. She didn't do it once. She warned her not to do it, and she did it again. I.e., like,
she
really?
She
in, but with witnesses, after he had warned her in front of witnesses not to do it. So they have problems. This relationship is not a good relationship. It's not. There's some communication issues. Okay? V'hevi et korbana aleha. She has to bring a korban. Asiri ta'ifa kemach se'orim. Tenth of an eifa kemach. Lo yitzok aleha shemen v'lo yiten aleha levona. No oil, no incense, frankincense. Ki minchat kina'otu. It's a mincha offering. What? Why the women, not the men? I hate to break it to you, it's not true. The Mishnah says that just like she goes through the process and the ordeal, but he is also a nivdak as well. Like the waters, when she drinks them, it says... Correct.
He has no.
According to the Torah, he has no halachic obligation of fidelity to her. But he can marry another woman.
Except for Ashish.
What do you mean?
He doesn't violate
his wife's trust. He violates another wife, another man.
She's the one who gives birth.
You don't like that, huh?
No.
Right.
There's no symmetry in halacha.
Correct.
What? The woman is the property of the man.
No, she's not. That's definitely not true. Not property. I don't disagree with that formulation. She's not. She's his wife. He's her husband, but she's not his property.
And also, this is such a public embarrassment.
Oh.
And there's no.
Why is this women's issues? I don't know. There's a man's issues too. I don't know. You know, like. Wait, we're going to get there. This is exactly my point. You think when a person brings his wife to the Beit HaMikdash, to think about it, the Beit HaMikdash, and like in front of everybody, the whole world knows, and forget her stomach blowing up. Let's say it didn't blow up. You know what I'm saying?
But he still did nothing.
Hold on. I just want to make this clear. I want to get to this. It's very important. It's much worse than you think.
Like, what man sits in shul and he's like, I'm having marital problems?
That's what they do.
What are you talking about?
Maybe your husband doesn't talk.
One second. It's not that they talk and show to each other. But imagine the Gabbai Shabbat Chavut and Avraham Yisrael Yaakov. You varach et Moshe Shlomo et Rivka Shehem Niyafu Acharat Hasheni. You know what I'm saying? Like really? Like you know. Right. The rabbis give me the sermon. I'd like to ask the Friedmans to come up to the bima for a minute. You're laughing. This is that times a million.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Don't laugh. You're like, it's so beyond our imagination. Right. So I just want to explain to you, as I said, we were laughing about something else. It's much worse than you think. I'll explain to you in a second.
Oh.
Yeah, it gets worse. Okay? V'hikriv pasuk ketzayim. V'hikriv ota hakohen. V'hemida lifnei Hashem. Okay? The Kohen brings her and stands her before Hashem. She can't enter into the Beit HaMikdash like this. V'hemida lifnei Hashem, the Chazal say, is b'shar nikanor. She's at the shar, the main gate in the Beit HaMikdash. She doesn't enter into the Beit HaMikdash to offer her korban. The Kohanim bring her korban and offer it on the Mizbeah. She's standing outside. Okay, right at the gate. He takes water from the kior, holy water, And a kli cheres. A kli cheres is a clay pot. We don't use clay pot in the Beit HaMikdash. Obviously, it's a Beit HaMikdash. Kli cheres is a peasant. It's low. Nothing. So he. What's the idea, obviously? Low act. Umin ha'afar asher yeh bekarka ha'mishpit. What?
Lower grade water.
Wait, umina afar asher yeh bekarka mishkan. There is afar. There is dirt. They had a special like. They had a balata. Literally, they had a like a tile that was that they left unattached, and it had a ring on it that they would pick up this tile and collect little dirt from under it and stick it in the water. Okay, it was designated for that. They had a place where they would take dirt from the floor of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. And he puts it in the water. And he stands there before God. Okay? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, we just learned that, remember? He stood her up in Pasuk Tetzayin. See the Pasuk Tetzayin? It says, so now again, see where I am in Rashi on Yudchet? Ela mesiin ayu otami makom lemakom kedei liyaga. They schlep her from place. Come here. Okay, come here. Now we're going to come here. Take her from place to place. Stand right here. Do this. Stand here. Hold this. In order liyaga to tire her out, to wear her out. Hopefully vitoda, she'll admit what she did. We don't want to do this. We don't want to pour the water. We don't want to erase the name of God. We want to debase her, basically, in order that until finally she says, all right, you're right, I did it, okay, fine. Because if she does it, then she doesn't drink the water, but she has to get divorced.
But she thought, she never did anything. And it's a false accusation. She didn't do anything.
She doesn't have to drink the water.
She
but
she's still on the side of the year. And the woman that was shed, the woman that was shed, was the
before.
But, yeah.
But, okay, the whole point of being chosen with that is that her husband has reason to suspect her. He asks her to please not be secluded in a room with a specific person for a specific amount of time.
Right, 10 minutes.
She willingly, like, she knowing that, violated that trust.
Right.
So
a modern person would say, who's he to tell her what to do, but I agree with you. Okay, right.
So I'm saying, like it's a very specific halachic situation. He made a very specific
request, demand, slash.
She violated. Whether she did anything in the room or not is almost irrelevant in the situation.
You're right, but why does it become this big public thing?
Yes, I know, because it was a situation in which wait a minute, think of Shakespeare. We go Shakespeare cuckolding, everybody knows it. It's everybody's business. Everybody knows who the cuckold is. And he has reason to suspect her.
She quoted you Shakespeare, she beat you.
In Shakespeare, the women are cuckolded, the men are cuckolded.
First of all,
right.
First of all, as we all know,
right.
Everybody does know.
And
everybody does know.
So how do you? Maybe you have to have a public ma'amad in order to stop it, in order to determine.
Whether it's a man or a woman, that's what I'm saying. For here, it's only if it's a woman. That's what I'm saying. You're right. Sociologically, it does.
What do they do with the, what do they do with the man who's with an Ishtish?
What?
What do they do with the man who's with an Ishtish?
No.
A man who's with an who actually not suspected. Man who, not in the room, not secluded.
You doing that today?
No, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. A man who's with an Ishtish.
Ah. And there's witness. I don't know.
No, they put to death, both of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Both of them has an
arm? Yeah, but it's not because, it's because he violated. He was with a married woman.
Right.
But if he's with, let's say he goes, hires a prostitute.
He's allowed.
Yeah. Right? As long as she's not married. Correct. There's no, I said, halachically, there isn't symmetry. Even today, there's not symmetry. You understand that? There's not symmetry. Her isur is a d'oraita. Does that make you feel better?
No, we don't do this. We don't do this sort of thing.
This never happened.
It never happened.
Definitely tried. No, the Gemara does not say that about sota.
Never happened?
No, it did happen. The Gemara does not.
It would never be in the Torah. That would never happen.
Yeah, sure there is. There's Ben Sorer Umura, the Gemara says. Right. There's a few cases, but the Sort does not want to be.
Really?
Yeah, nice try.
Oh,
You were hoping. Wait, we're not up to the good point. Right here, we're going to get to it. Hamid, HaKohen. Right here. Not one of them. Dadi Arayta. Wait. The Hamid HaKohen et Aisha lifnei Hashem. He stands her up after schlepping her from place to place. Upara et Rosh Aisha. Upara et Rosh Aisha. What does it sound like? Right. He uncovers her. Not uncovers her hair. He unbraids her hair. He does something. 1 second. Venatan al kapea et minchat hazikaron. Minchat knaoti. And he makes her hold her minchat zikaron, or minchar korban mincha. Ubiyara kohen yumei amarim ma'aririm. And in the hand of the kohen is yumei amarim ma'aririm. I want to stop for a minute on this thing. Not for a minute. We're going to stop on this idea of upara et rosh ha'isha. What happens? Let's describe to me. Can somebody in their own mind describe to me, what does the kohen do? Describe to me the process. Laura.
I don't know. He comes, she's got it braided, right? Right. Up. He comes and he...
What?
Eddie's.
Try to imagine in your mind. Try to imagine in your mind. The Kohen is wearing the big day kahuna. Yeah. Right? He comes to this woman, this married woman. He touches her. He has to do something to her hair in such a way as, like you said, rips off her you know,
shato.
What?
She's got a braid.
Right. Okay. So now that you think that's bad enough, it's much worse than that.
Oh, dear.
Right. Says the Mishnah. I'm reading you the Mishnah, okay? 1 second. I'm reading you the Mishnah in Sota.
Before you read the Mishnah, can I just say one thing that maybe... It reminds me, the Parat Rosh HaShah reminds me of when a man goes out to war and he brings back a captive.
Yes.
And he has to let her hair grow wild when her fingernails grow long.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And we say, why do we do that? So that her physical appearance is not what attracts him to her.
Mm-hmm.
We let her be unattractive, and then if he still wants to marry her afterwards, then he can marry her, right?
He can still marry her.
Okay. So I am wondering if here the idea of making the woman unattractive, given the context, is also somehow A, for the man with whom she cheated,
not with the man with whom she cheated, her husband.
And I know, but
he's not there.
He's there. Oh, he's there.
He's there.
Oh, yeah. Less attractive to have your
hair. His role here.
Watch. Yeah. He has to bring her to the Beit HaMikdash and say, "This is my wife." Yes, he has to present her. She didn't show up on her own. No, not the Mishnah. Her husband. Her husband. Wait. I have to meet you. You have. First of all, look at Rashi. Manot, look at Rashi on Upara. I'm so sorry. Manot. That's what you say to women. That you could be women. You're women. No, but it's not derogatory. In Israel, you could be like a bunch of women who are like 75-year-old women. Manot, bo boni to
bonitokes. It's not appropriate.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
Ladies, how do you say ladies?
I only teach women, and I.
Zirotai.
You wouldn't say manot.
No, never.
It's totally accepted.
It's totally not.
In Israeli society.
I'm
not making it up.
Yeah. You're not making it up. I teach only women.
And?
I never call them banos.
The fact that you won't do it doesn't mean it's not accepted in Israeli society.
Just because it's accepted doesn't make it right.
Okay. Upara. Now we're going off the rails. Upara. Look at Rashi and Upara. Soter et kliat zara. He undoes her braids. Kedei libzota. In order to degrade her. Rashi and Yurchet. Mikan, that's Rashi, from this we learn the Bnot Yisrael, Shegulu Yerosh, Genai Lahem, that an uncovered hair is Genai. So that's this Yifrei, the halachic makor, the halachic source, Genai is an embarrassment, a negative, it's an inappropriate for them. I'm reading you the Mishnah, degradation, thank you. The Mishnah says the following, Ma'alin otal l'shar ha-mizrach, shal petach shar nikonor. They bring her up to the eastern gate, okay, the Kotel HaMaravi, think about it, just you remember the Beit HaMikdash was facing the other way. The Beit HaMikdash faced the Kotel HaMaravi. So the entrance was the opposite side, the Kotel HaMizrachi, Shar Nikanor, the very famous Shar. Shasham Mashkin et HaSotot. That's where the Sotot stood, Umitarin et HaYoldot. If a woman gave birth, she had to bring a Korban. And she was not Tahor until she brought a Korban. She brought a Korban, she stood at the entrance. So Umitarin et Mitzorain. Mitzorain also couldn't enter. They had to stand at the gate before they had the Kohen. Kohen Ochez Bibigadeha. The Kohen grabs onto her clothes. Im Nikru'u, Nikru'u. Im nifrimu, nifrimu. If they tied, if they got ripped, they got ripped. If they were nifrimu, if they became shredded, they became shredded. Ad shehu megale et liba. Until megale et liba. Until it uncovered her heart. I.e., he's literally pulling at her clothes. Okay? Visoteret sa'ara. So it's not only that he just pulls off her tichel. He is tearing at her clothes. I'm going to read you another Mishnah. One second. Mevi chevel mitzri. Much. You were wondering how is that to get there. V'achakach mevi chevel mitzri. Achakach mevi chevel mitzri. They would bring a chevel mitzri, an Egyptian robe. Why Egyptian robe? She did a maaseh mitzri. So it means Egyptian. V'koshro l'mala midadeha. And they would tie it above her breasts. Why? Why you tie a rope? Because he's pulling at her clothes, and he's pulling at it so hard, they want to make sure that her clothes don't fall off. Right. V'chol harotzeh lir'ot ba'lir'ot. Anybody comes, can see her. Yeah, big time. Big time spectacle in the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? This is Rabbi Yehuda, I'm going to get the mission of Yehuda Omer. If she was pretty, lo ayu mugaleu. Then he wouldn't cover it.
What?
It's inappropriate. Okay? We don't pass him like Rabbi Yehuda. If she was na'eh, pretty, lo ayu mugaleu. And if her hair looked good, then he wouldn't uncover it because it would be inappropriate for all the people, all the pirche. The Rashi says the pirche kahuna, all the young kids are standing there. A lot of people standing around.
You judge us whether she's pretty or not pretty.
What's that? I know. I guess you'd have to like according to Rabbi Yehuda, like, what do you think?
You have to share with us.
Right? Doesn't help you, right?
It's gonna ruin your week.
I don't hide it. These are mishnayot. Yeah. I'm sorry. Like, what? What did you say? Oh, they're mad judging.
Eight. Yeah. Hold up the cards. Is she pretty? Is she not pretty?
Yeah, that is.
Okay. Right. So this upara et rosha. It sounds like, oh, upara et rosha.
Bliss.
What?
Yeah.
Upara et rosha. I told you I was talking about uncomfortable situations. Oh. Upara et rosha.
There were a lot of bad episodes came you could have gone.
Yeah, sorry. Uncovers her hair. It sounds very innocent. Oh, okay, uncovers her hair.
No.
It was much worse than that.
Wow.
I want to talk about. For you guys, you're upset. How does Cohen feel? You're asking, like, we're all joking around, like, they're doing this thing. Right? You know, okay, there's a sota. Who wants it?
No, but it's not that. It's not
really?
That.
You think that the Cohen wanted it?
No.
Definitely not.
Can you imagine
wait a minute. I think the Cohen maybe many of the Kohanim didn't want them, but the Kohanim are not Kohanim by virtue of their righteousness. They are Kohanim by virtue of their birth.
Okay.
Which means that there is a certain percentage of them who are just as base as anyone else, and we know historically that the Kohanim were corrupt and were terrible
people. Some were
corrupt.
People. Correct.
Some of the Kohanim were corrupt and took bribes and were terrible people, and even from the days of the Navi, we see the, you know, the children of the...
Can we speak in the ideal sense? Can we speak in the ideal sense?
The children of Eli were like the worst, sleeping with prostitutes in the gate.
Gemara says they didn't sleep with them. The Gemara says other things.
Right,
okay.
Who does not says that they probably did.
You can't read shots. Come on.
We know that the Kohanim were not always these people. Not every Kohen was the Kohen God.
Wait, do you mean to say that a situation leaves itself, a situation is ripe for abuse?
Yes.
Yes, I agree with you.
Except
this is in front of the Shaar Beit HaMikdash. There's nothing done in private.
What we do is we set up institutions.
She's acted like a cancer. She's acted and totally betrayed the trust of her people.
Hold on.
Without remorse. And they're saying
she betrayed the trust of her people. Really,
please. Of her husband, and we're not even sure.
Skip to Parak Vav. Let's come back. Skip to Parak Vav. Turn to Parak Vav. By the Bereshit Moshe Leimon. Vav. Chapter 6. Forward. Chapter 6. Parak Vav.
Okay.
Aleph. What? I'm not done. God said to Moshe, saying, "Daber al bnei Yisrael ve'amarta aliyem ish o isha ki afli lindor neder nazir lahazir lahashem." A person who wants to make an oath of Nazaritness, Nazirite oath. Ve'miyayin v'shechar yazir chometz yayin v'chometz shechar lo yishten. No wine, no booze, no nothing. Okay.
What does that tell you? That tells you that there were people who had to be committed. Like,
Rashi pasuk bet. Ki afli, yafrish. Lama nismecha parshat nazir le parshat sota. What's the connection? What's the samchut of parshiot? Lomar lecha, to teach you. Shekol haro'eh sota bekil kula. Anyone who witnessed, who saw the sota in her degradation, yazir atzmo min hayayin. He should make himself take an oath of Nazaritness from the wine. Shehu mevili de ni'uf. The experience of witnessing the sota and kilkula, it affects. It affects the person. It affects the witnesses. What?
I say that's exactly what I was thinking, is that you're putting a stumbling block in front of the
corner. Oh, correct. It affects. I totally agree with your point. I want to talk about it in the ideal situation. I don't want to talk. Yes, it is. I agree with you. We have to hope for people who are Ovdei Hashem, who are not rabbis, who abuse situations. We have to hope for that. We have to take safeguards to prevent that from happening. I hope in the Beit HaMikdash they took those safeguards as well, as you're right. And that's the debate about, you know, central authority versus diverse authority, et cetera, et cetera. It goes back to the original discussion that we had. But in this, even in the, let's talk about the ideal situation. The ideal situation, the Kohen is Hashem Shamayim. Everybody's Hashem Shamayim. Everybody's crying about the Sota. She's crying. They're crying. Everybody's upset. It's a terrible thing. Terrible all around. But this is what the Torah says to do. This is the way we repair the trust between a husband and wife.
Really?
Yeah. After they're done. Let's say she's clean. Oh. She didn't do it. Her whole point is...
How did she go back to his house?
She wants to go back to his house. If she didn't want to go back to his house, she could very easily have said, yeah, I did it. She'll divorce her. The whole reason why he doesn't get a divorce and they go through this whole thing is in order to reestablish trust. And if nothing happens, then he knows that she didn't do it.
Wait, but if she says that,
that's the whole point of it. She says she did it.
Divorce.
Yes. They get divorced.
Doesn't she have to be put to death with
the... No, no witnesses. There's no edim that she was mina efet. There's no edim. There's no test. The whole point is there's no edim. Nobody knows what happened. It's in order he doesn't trust her. If he didn't want her, he could divorce her anyway. I don't want to divorce you. Bye. See you later.
But she might say she, either way, she transgressed Yichud. And the way to combat the transgression of Yichud is the total opposite, which is complete exposure.
You're always going to look at it from, and I agree with you, I love your perspective. You know what I'm saying? But and I agree with you. The point here is, in order to reestablish this trust, right?
You,
what?
It shouldn't work.
It would work.
No,
it did work. Remember, no. Remember, you guys are like totally misunderstanding this. It's not about her trusting him. It's an asymmetrical relationship. Whose trust are we looking for? It's about him trusting her. Otherwise, they always wanted to say, "I didn't do it. I did it. Fine." And
what if she doesn't want to go through it and she admits she did it, even though she didn't?
She gets divorced. That's it. She can do that. They want her to do that.
Wait
a second.
Admitting to something she didn't do.
Yeah, so.
Wait a minute. Maybe this is a way to give the woman power in the relationship, right? If she wants out of her marriage,
yeah.
And she can't.
If a woman wants out of her marriage, no. If a woman wants out of her marriage, she has many, many ways to get out of her marriage. She just won't get her
tell
back.
Tell that to all those like,
she won't, what?
Tell that to all those like, so much.
Yeah, you're right.
You are totally misunderstanding. A husband at that time, you are.
A woman, are we putting ourselves in her position? Are we thinking, how can I ever go back to this person's house?
To him?
Yes.
You're, again. Think about it in the times of Chazal. Laura, remember, one second. I think you are misunderstanding. A woman's position in society, she could not support herself. She had no standing, right? Her desire is to be in his house and for him to support her and her children.
But that's why she does.
Which makes it so much worse.
What? Which yeah. means...
She has no other options.
She has no other options. Correct. She doesn't want to get divorced and she doesn't want to get divorced and go be a professor, you know, in a college. She can't do that. Remember. So therefore, we want... It's not... Why do you think they lived happily ever after in the first place? You're misunderstanding marriage. Your view of marriage is
modern.
Yes, thoroughly modern. It's thoroughly modern. Correct. Your view of marriage is thoroughly modern. The Torah wants to reestablish trust, and he has to take her back. Remember, according to Halacha, if she doesn't, he has to take her back. That's right. If he puts her through this, he has to think about it. She says, I didn't do it. I don't want my life to be overturned. I don't want my whole family to be thrown out of your house. Which he will do. And then what? And then she's Ruth collecting food at the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. So that's why she doesn't admit to it.
Correct.
She needs to know they give her on the way.
Correct.
So she isn't really...
Correct. The Torah's interest is in reestablishing trust to the point where he takes her back.
Doesn't she get pregnant? Isn't
what?
That the result?
She's guaranteed to have children. Right. Right, the cut that, yeah. If she goes through this whole thing. I want some, but my point though is, like, it's the whole thing is terrible and uncomfortable. Right?
And,
exactly. Chazal said it's a great segula for barren women, right? She could just go through the sota process. You know what I'm saying? Great, right, wonderful. But I don't think they announced it, but it was in front of the whole world. Everyone was there. Oh, I mean, the Ben Amida, sure.
Get your popcorn and
cook. So that's the point. Chazal understood. So, I don't hide things. We struggle with this. It's a terribly uncomfortable situation. But in order to do what the Torah considered to repair a broken family, and Chazal put it in this way. Right, remember, they take the water. What do they do with the water? They add the thing, and then they make her take an oath. What do they do? What else do they add in the water? What's the final thing they add in the water? Right? They take the parsha of Sota, they write it, and then they erase it, and they take the erasers and put it in the water.
Really? The issue of witchcraft in a certain way. Not witchcraft, like magic.
No, well, whatever.
Whatever.
So God acknowledges he's willing to have his name erased in order to reestablish... I won't say shalom by it, but reestablish a Jewish home.
But surely if she knows what's going to happen to her, like she's going to blow up and whatever the case may be.
She'll admit it if she did
she'll
it.
She'll admit it.
Right, that's the point. That's
I'm
the
saying
point.
Nobody wants to really publicly...
She didn't explode. Explode.
In the light,
her, whatever.
Yeah.
Bloated.
She's very bloated.
She's
a really
good
in a relationship. I think it's worse than that.
You're assuming that a relationship's a relationship of love... and mutual trust and whatever.
Yeah, that's
they were transactional relationships. Each person, and if they developed, like, you trust me, I'm not going back. Go back to Fiddler. Do you love me? Do I what? Like you know, do you love mom? Like, they didn't love each other. They were married, and that was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they developed a sense of understanding and trust over time. You know what I'm saying? She was the matriarch of the family. He was the patriarch of the family. But she said, oh, Shalom Yisrael. Let's not be naive about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this desire to disnify history is false. You know what I'm saying? It just wasn't that way. People married because they needed to build families and build homes, and he wanted to have children, and she wanted to have security. Vizel, and that's the way life was.
That's how it was in those days.
What? That's how life was. For, that's how life was for the vast majority of human history until our grandparents, and probably not including our grandparents. Their view of marriage was just not that. Maybe our parents have started. All but one?
Our generation, really.
My, Rina told me about a friend of ours, I won't say who it is at all, who's, you know, an older people, whose parents passed away, whose father passed away. And then she was telling her how her parents hated each other their whole lives. They just hated each other. Why? But that was what it was. You just didn't get divorced. You were married.
But it's the generation before us.
Right,
you
right.
Just stayed married.
But I'm saying up until human history. So the Torah is not describing something. The whole world has changed. It just has changed. This is the way that it was. So like for us, we see this horrible thing.
And it's Emmet, and here it is. It's written. And we don't have the... But she has time to repair the sanctity of marriage.
Yeah, let me ask you, how's marriage doing when everybody expects Disney? How's marriage doing today?
It's not doing so well.
Yeah, no. Right.
The truth is, I think it's probably...
Forget 50% divorce rate, and in America, 40% of children are born out of wedlock. 40% of children. There was an article in the Washington Post when Murphy Brown decided to have a child. Anybody remember this?
Yeah,
Murphy Brown?
Yeah.
Murphy Brown decided to have a child out of wedlock. Then Vice President Dan Quayle was running for president, and Dan Quayle made a speech about how Murphy Brown was a violation of values in society. Murphy Brown mocked him on television and ended his presidency. And he was not a legitimate candidate anyway, but she mocked him on television, and that was the end of him. Okay? There was an article in the Washington Post. You can search for it. Search for Murphy Brown was right by a researcher who says research conclusive research proves that children born to single parents, doesn't matter when, how, what, whatever, have significantly lower achievements than children born to two families, to two parents. How is society doing? Like, it, but it all goes together. If you insist on romantic love, if you insist on fairy tale, in order to get married, in order to have children, right, then you're not going to have it. So you'll have children out of wedlock. You're denigrated, then marriage, if it's not perfect, it's not going to be. What? You have singles crisis. You have a shidduch crisis, both for men and for women. Why? Because I'm marrying my religious expectations with my Disney expectations. Those go together. We pay a terrible price for these things. Terrible price for our expectations. So don't think that don't think we've moved on and we're better. Just don't think that, because we're not.
But there's different kinds of ex-lovers now. It's not just
what?
Childhood.
It's a trade-off.
Maybe it's not that. It's much worse than that.
Anyway, okay, we're like way, way over time. But you have to understand that the Torah acknowledged the idea of sota. Acknowledged the idea of the sota is a terrible experience. It's terrible for the woman. It's terrible for the husband. It's terrible for the kohen.
And for the people.
And for the people.
You can't ever unsee that.
You can't ever unsee that. Which only makes us like wonder, like the things we see on television are like a billion times worse than that. You can't unsee something, and it affects you in some way.
Yeah.
So what do you do about that? The answer is, sometimes, become a Nazir. Sometimes we require uncomfortable situations. Sometimes uncomfortable situations are necessary. What are you going to do? Life is hard. Life is challenging. We'll stop here. I was going to talk about roots, but I'll just...